All right, good evening, everyone. So happy to be back on Tuesday nights. I love Tuesday nights. This year I sort of prepared for and designed a bit differently than my previous shiurim. It is somewhat more halakhic based, taking a look into the actual halakhic observance of one of the mitzvahs, or the mitzvah that we will be doing next week on Hanukkah. And that mitzvah, or that part of the mitzvah that I want to deal with, is Persume Nisa, which is Aramaic for publicizing the miracle. As we'll hopefully explore together, this is not necessarily the only mitzvah that we find that has the additional obligation to not only do the mitzvah, but to do the mitzvah in a public way to send a message. You don't find it everywhere. There's actually only two other places that it's recorded. Persume Nisa exists. One is by reading the Megillah on Purim. It's supposed to be done in a public setting. And the other, interestingly, is the Dalad Kosos on Pesach, the four cups of wine, which is interesting because, by definition, you're in your house. So what does Persume Nisa mean there? Hopefully, that question will be answered. But really, two specific things, two specific areas of this idea that I found to be extremely fascinating, two actually quite separate ideas about this same point that I wanted to explore with you together. Just as a starter, not as a starter, we'll get to it. The introduction that I want to give you, and we're going to be looking at a bunch of Rambams here, is the Rambam, the first three halachos of the Rambam, Hilchos Megillah and Chanukah. Now, Hilchos Megillah and Chanukah are grouped together. Four prakim, the first two are Megillah, or the halachos of Purim. The second two prakim of Rambam, Hilchos Megillah and Chanukah, talk about Chanukah. So, this being the beginning of Parak Gimel, we're talking about the first three halachos where the Rambam discusses Chanukah. I'm not necessarily going to read word for word, but I'll start. B'bayis sheni kishemalchu yavan gazru zeiros al yisrael u'batlu datam v'lo hinichu osam la'asok v'tor v'mitzvos. In the second temple period, when the Greeks ruled, they made certain decrees against the Jews, and they prohibited their religion, or they denied their ability to practice their religion, and they didn't let them learn Torah and perform mitzvos. Upashti yadam and monam, and they took their money, and they took their women. V'nichnasu lehechal upartzu v'ofratzus, and they defiled the temple. They made a great trouble for the Jewish people. And then up until the point where the Chashmonai family decided to wage war, and the high priests, and they were the high priests, and they killed them, I guess being the Greeks. V'hoshio Yisrael miyadam, the last line of this first halacha. And they appointed a king from the Chashmonai family, which, by the way, was not okay, because a king normally comes from the tribe of Yehuda, and they were making a king from the tribe of Levi. Interesting point. And the kingdom once again belonged to Israel for another 200 years, up until everything fell apart again, but in a much bigger way, because it's still in a state of falling apart today. Ukesha gavri Yisrael al oyveim, and when we defeated our enemies, ve'avdom b'chamisha ve'esrim b'chodesh Kislev, and we destroyed them, or we made them go away on the 25th of Kislev. It was on the 25th of Kislev. Sorry, ve'nichnasu lehechal v'lomatu shem and tahor, and this is the whole oil story that we mentioned last week, and there was only enough for one day. I'm sorry that I'm skipping around, but we know this. And they found one bottle of pure oil. And because of this, 25. Now, this is a very lengthy and descriptive introduction. I mentioned last week that the Rambam does not do this. Ever. He goes right into it. I wish I put it on the page. I didn't think to do it because it's prime real estate, these pages. Don't want to make them too long. But look at the first halacha of the first parak of the Hilchos Megillah, which was only two prekim before this, and it just goes right into reading Megillah. It doesn't talk about the really awesome story of Purim, which is really awesome. It doesn't mention it at all. You cannot find the story of Purim. If someone asks you, where can I read up on the Purim story, you will not find it in the Rambam, because he doesn't mention it. But he mentions the whole story, the whole story. He doesn't leave anything out, using three whole halachos before he even talks about one halacha of Hanukkah. He uses three whole paragraphs to describe it. And the question is obvious. Why is he doing this? Why is he, dare I say, wasting his words on a story that we all know, that his point of writing this book was not to tell us a story that we didn't know. That was not the goal of his work. Yes?
Is it possible that because for these other holidays we already have a book where we read about it, like Haggadah for Pesach and Megillah for Purim?
I'm not going to say it's impossible, but I would say the Rambam was not in the business of informing us of things that we didn't, that we likely knew. Meaning, his point was someone wanted to observe one of the commandments that are found in the Torah. The Rambam will tell you what you should do or how you should do it. I think it didn't really, it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't his goal to give us background on anything. Meaning to say, what I mean by this is, if he does discuss in a background format the story behind it, it must directly relate to the actual observance of the mitzvah. Without knowing this, you would not be performing the mitzvah properly, and therefore I, as a, the Rambam, as the author of this work, must tell you the story if you were to do this halacha right, this halacha of lighting the menorah on Hanukkah. And I don't need to tell you the story in other situations because you don't necessarily need to know the story, even though it would make you smile and happy and maybe you'll close your eyes a little more when you concentrate. But here, if you don't know the story, you're not doing the mitzvah right. That must be, that is the first thought for someone familiar with the Rambam, why he would be mentioning this. Now, what this directly implies is that hand in hand with the mitzvah of Hanukkah, which is lighting the candles, is the publicizing of this story. Is everyone doing this mitzvah knowing the story? That the mitzvah and the story go hand in hand, and they are not separated. It must be. That's why I brought this first. The idea of Pursume Nisa is unique in that other mitzvos we do not necessarily go at length to say if you don't know the story, you're not doing it right. A great example, try and very clearly explain to me the story behind Lulav and Esrog. What exactly I'm doing and why. Now, much of it is sort of got hijacked by the Kabbalistic world. The Arizal will tell you, you're fighting the Yetzer Hara, you're bringing all the Jews together in one thing, you're fighting all the directions, you're conquering. Lots of interesting things going on when I'm shaking a branch. Now, if I don't think of any of those things, I'm still doing my mitzvah perfectly right. I think it will add to my mitzvah if I'm aware of these things. But here, that's not the case, because of this idea of Pursume Nisa. Let's go a little deeper into what is exactly the nature of Pursume Nisa is. Here's the Gemara. We mentioned the second part of this Gemara last week, the Mai Chanukah part. These are the lines directly before that part. Tanu Rabbanan, this is the second source on the page. Tanu Rabbanan, Mitzvah Chanukah Ner Ishu Beso. The mitzvah of Chanukah is one candle for a man and his entire household. The Hamahadrin, and if you want to do it even better, Ner L'chol Echad V'Echad. You get a candle for each person in the family for each night, which means, to be clear, on each and every night, nights 1 through 8, everyone in the household would light one candle. So if you have 5 people in your family, there would be 5 candles lit on each night, not changing from that amount. The Hamahadrin Menahadrin, says the Gemara, the best, most beautiful, glorious way to do this mitzvah, there's machlokas. Be'ishamai madlik achas. Omrim yom rishon madlik shmona, mikan ve'elech poches v'holeh. Be'ishamai would light it one way. He would say, on the first day you light 8, and every day afterwards it would be going down in number, so it would be 8, and then 7, and 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ubeisilah Omer, Beisilah says the opposite. Yom Rishon, you light one, and it goes up. And there's famously, I cut this part off of the Gemara, I didn't put it here. There are 2 specific reasons for that. Malam Kodesh Ve'en Moridin, if you're familiar. And Keneged Parei HaChag of Sukkos, why Beishamai ties in Sukkos, that's a whole other shiur. We could talk about that another time. But I'm specifically not going into that because it's not relevant here. Then, it says, Tanu Rabbanan, rabbis learned, in a brisa, Ner Chanukah mitzvah la'anicha al Pesach beso mibachutz. The mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is to put it at the doorpost of your house, on the outside of your house. Im haya dar ba'aliyah, and if you lived on a higher floor than the ground floor, then menicha b'chalon hasmucha l'rishus harabim, you would put it in the window that is facing the public area. Uveshasa sakana, and in a time where it might be dangerous to publicly show your religious beliefs through your window or outside of your door, menicha al shulchanu v'dayo. You could put it on your own dinner table, and that's good enough. Amar Rava tzarcha ner acheres l'shtamish l'ora. That's a different halacha entirely. Very clearly, the Gemara says the mitzvah is to do it outside. Very few halachos, if you try and rack your brain, where the mitzvah does not involve you either doing it inside or doing it in a specific place like the shul or the Beit HaMikdash or something like that. This is just make sure people can see it. Obviously, the idea of Persume Nisa. Now Rashi explains, Mi Bachut, the next source, Mishum Persume Nisa. That's why it's outside, so that you can publicize the miracle, not just publicize that you're doing the mitzvah. Again, just let's be precise about what Persume Nisa means. We're not publicizing, hey, I'm doing the mitzvah of Chanukah, that's so sweet, I'm Jewish. No. We're publicizing through this mitzvah that a miracle of God took place a long time ago that he performed for the Jewish people. That's very different than publicizing a menorah. The message is what we are publicizing. It could be that we lose sight of that when we just put a menorah outside. We're not just publicizing what we're doing, we're publicizing the message behind what we're doing, which is what the Rambam went out of his way to describe. And he says, after that, Rashi says, V'lo birshus harabim, don't put it actually in the street, in public, meaning don't put it in public property. It must be in your private property, ela b'chatzero, in your front yard, she'batehen hayu psuchin l'chatzer, because your house would always open up into a front yard. So put it, literally, what he's describing is, you have a front door, you have a front yard, put it right outside your door in your front yard. Not, I wish I could show you more, if you have a door and you have a front yard, don't put it at the edge of your front yard as if it's at the sidewalk, put it at your door. That's 2 different areas. I'm being very specific because Tosvos disagrees with this entirely. Tosvos says, on this very same law, mitzvah la'anicha al pesach beso mibachutz, at the front, the opening of your house on the outside. Umairi, what is that referring to when you have to put it at the opening of your house outside? That's only deleka chatzer ela bayis omed samach l'rshisaram. That's only if you don't have a front yard. So if your door opens up into the sidewalk right there, into the public area. So that's when, Tosa says, that's when the Gemara says you should put it right outside your door. But, aval, and I underline this part, im yesh chatzer lifnei habayis, mitzvah laniach al pesach chatzer. He says, in normal circumstances, if you have a front yard, don't put it outside your door. Put it in the front of your house, like by your fence. Put it right there. That's where people will see it. It's a very interesting argument. Can anyone think of why, what the difference would be? Why Tosfos, they, would go out of their way, or what they saw in this Gemara that would make them think, you know, that there is a difference of 15 feet or so here that makes a big difference, enough for him to them to mention it? Yes? So basically the argument is, Tosfos is, they're saying that not enough people are going to see it if it's at your door, and Rashi is saying it's enough. Visible enough, you don't need to do more than that, that is already considered publicizing the miracle. I think that's a perfectly good explanation, but it seems like a weird, I think that's a great explanation, and I'm okay saying that that's that. Let's see if we have other answers. Yes, Tikva.
Maybe the focus of the mibachut is kind of like, you might think, Rashi might think that you're putting it at the entrance of your house, but also somewhere where, like, you can see it. Whereas, like, mibachut is really giving the idea of, like, it's really supposed to be that from outside it's visible. So, like, if it's not, like, even if it's outside for you, but not outside for people from outside seeing it, then that's not outside enough.
Meaning, is the outside for the sake of the people out there, or the outside for the sake of it not being inside, but you doing a public display?
Right. Like, something like that suggests that it's really for, from, like, outside.
So this is definitely one way I saw, again, these are similar ideas, both understandings. Did you have something you wanted to...
Well, this is something similar, like, if the question is, I mean, there's a question even if it's pursuing Nisa, meaning for the family themselves, or for, you know, other people walking outside. Maybe just for Shemunisa for yourself is already enough.
Right. So this is the point that I wanted to get to shortly. The point that I wanted to get to shortly is that there are actually maybe two different types of the same mitzvah of Pirsume Nisa. There may be two functions of it, or maybe serving two different entities, two different parties. It's clear that Tosfos goes out of his way to reinterpret the Gemara, which is, again, he's saying that the Gemara is talking about an exception case, which is weird because the Gemara would probably have mentioned that the case that the Gemara mentions is an exception and not the rule. So Tosfos is going out of his way, making it hard, a hard explanation of the Gemara, a difficult one, to say this mitzvah is about the public. It is not about you. It's likely that if you put it in front of your fence, you won't even see your menorah, except for the time that you're lighting it. Think about it. You're not even seeing it. Your whole family is probably not going to see your own menorah. You can't just sit there and sing with, I mean, you could do it for the 5 minutes that you're there, but it's likely you're going to go back inside and there's going to be no menorah in your house, which is probably what we, most of us, grew up having. Like, part of the, you know, special aspect of Hanukkah is that there's always this part of the house or part of wherever we live that there are menorahs lit and it's beautiful, and obviously lights are very symbolic and there's just always something special about it. According to Tosfos, there's none of that special stuff going on. This is, I need to put a menorah outside my house. It's very much not an individual mitzvah, very much something we need to do for others. We are providing a service, so to speak, to the world by publicizing to them what took place here. Rashi is sort of he's saying, yes, you need to be publicizing this, but this has to do with you too, and it should always be next to your house as well, because there's something about your house that is also involved in this mitzvah. Again, the beso, it's not just outside. Again, what about if my front yard is 15 feet, meters, whatever, that's very different, but we're in Israel, long, What if I put it at the 7-meter mark? Meaning it's not in front of my house, it's not in the front yard. Is that okay? It's outside, right? Well, the Gemara says, Pesach Beso, has to be right outside your house. And Tosos is saying, if it's not outside your house, because that's only an exception case, it's in front of your front yard. That would imply that halfway through, even though it's outside, wouldn't do anything. I'm bringing that to show you that Rashi is specifically interpreting the Gemara to say it needs to be next to your house. And that's different than Tosos is saying it needs to be next to the street. This indicates that there are two different understandings of Pursumei Nisa. It could be that in some way we're supposed to be doing both, but there are definitely two functions. The nature of Pursumei Nisa is not one-dimensional. It is, I am publicizing this to the world outside of my house. At the same time, there is some degree of importance in publicizing this to my house itself, to me and to my family. There is actually a halacha that if you come home to your house at 11 o'clock at night and you didn't light candles yet and everyone's sleeping, you should wake someone up, light the candles, say, look at those, and then say, go back to sleep. Because Pursumei Nisa is so important that you need to have someone see it. You need to be doing this to someone else. Again, this is wild. If for some reason, I'm just trying to think of any sort of, you know, if I came home in the day and I need Rosh Hashanah and I needed to blow shofar, I don't have to wake anyone up to hear me blow the shofar for myself. I do the mitzvah because it's my mitzvah, it's not your mitzvah, and that's that. Yes?
Do things like that exist by Pesach and Purim?
That you need to wake someone up?
Well, I mean, if it's Pursumei Nisa also, you don't have to call attention to it. Can you read Megillah for yourself, and can you...
I believe you can read Megillah for yourself. I believe you can.
It
also should... and again, what... It's interesting, these two points, and thank you for bringing this up because this is going to be my very next point. These two aspects of Pursumei Nisa reflect perfectly to the other two mitzvos that involve Pursumei Nisa. Megillah, you're in a public setting, there's supposed to be, you know, everyone and their little kid dressed up and with the grogger, and it's supposed to be a gathering, it's supposed to be a upbeat atmosphere, as if it's like a little party that we're celebrating before the party even begins. Whereas the Pursumei Nisa of Pesach with the four cups of wine, where we're publicizing the nes, is very not public, relatively speaking. It's very much my family and my close relatives and maybe a couple friends or guests, but everyone is in their own house. There is no one outside at this time. It has to be late at night. And there seems to be still an idea of Pursumei Nisa there. But if you're doing the Pesach Seder by yourself, and you have to drink the four cups of wine, I don't believe in halacha you are not yotze if no one is around you. I believe you are, if you are stranded on an island and Purim comes and you have to read Megillah, I do not believe that you are not yotze if no one's around you. Here, you need someone to see it. You need it to be that way. Obviously, if you can't, if literally you're on your own island, I imagine it's not possible. The question is, and I'm not going to say 100% one way or the other because I would need to look it up, if there would still be the mitzvah of lighting Neros Chanukah. It's a very good question. Yes, Zach. Sorry.
There's a halacha about how long the candles have to last, right? So
correct.
There's a halacha about how long the second person has to see it for, or do they just have to watch it later?
I believe there is a certain amount of time that they have to see it. I don't think it's just a minute. It might be a half hour. Yes.
Like brisker terminology, would you say that it's a mitzvah on the chetza and the gavra? Because if you get to see it, you have to do the lighting and...
Pnei Yoshua is all up in that.
Yeah?
Okay? Wait for it. Wait for it.
All right.
But I would say no. What I am saying to you is that it is a mitzvah of the... not really the chetza, but it's not the gavra. Why? Because even Rashi... is saying it's your family, it's not you, because if you come home at 11 and light, you need to get someone else there. It's not you. That's just saying every master of their household and their family all get one light. That's all it means. This machlokas, by the way, is also reflected in a different halacha. I made it in smaller print here. it's a more subtle issue, but there's a problem that the Gemara is a bit vague in one area. It says the three levels, right? We talked about mitzvah is ner ishu beso. We talked about mahadrin is ner l'chol echad v'echad. Each one gets a light. And then mahadrin mina mahadrin, there's an argument whether it should go up or down. But who's lighting? Is it just me or is it everyone? The Gemara doesn't say if mahadrin is going on the ner ishu beso or the ner l'chol echad v'echad. And surprise, there are some Jewish people that argue about it. Rashi and Rambam say, now I would be impressed if you guys could put this together before I mention this. Rashi and the Rambam say that it's going on the Mahadrin, meaning the highest, the best form of this mitzvah is if every single individual in the household lights according to the day. The Tosvos, though, which is right after the bigger Tosvos, it's the smaller one right here, Nira Liri, the Beis Shammai beBeis Hillel lo kaimi ela aner ish ubeso, that when they argue on the Mahadrin mina Mahadrin level, they are only talking about one menorah in each house, which is actually the Sephardic ruling. That really, one menorah, women do not light, men, the children, one menorah is in the household. Shekein yesh yoser hidur, the ika hekera kishemosa v'holich. Why does he say that it's only one menorah? And here we get to this argument. Because there is more of a recognizing of how many candles there is or what night of Hanukkah is, etc. Now, this just requires a little imagination. Not everyone throughout history had a beautiful, nice menorah in their house. What they did have, though, were candles or little jugs with oil. So the way they would light is they would simply put a cup and some oil and a wick in it, and it would light. So if it was the second night, there would just be two, according to Tosos, there would be two cups of oil lit. Now, what if it was the first night and there were two people in your house? Then there would be two cups lit. It would look exactly like the second night with one person in the house. So the Tosfos are bringing up an issue. The issue is, if there are more people in your house and we're telling you to light according to the amount of people in your house and according to the day, anyone looking outside at this menorah will have no idea what you're doing. There could be 15 candles lit, and it could be, I'm not going to be able to do the math on the fly, the fourth night with however many people, or it could be the eighth night with however many people. You'll never know what's going on, how big the miracle was on that day. But if everyone knows that there's one menorah for every house, there's one set of candles, so every time you see seven candles, you'll know it's not the first day with a seven-person house. It's going to be the seventh day of Hanukkah, and there's one menorah for everyone's house. Clearly, Tosos was thinking about the people watching it and not you. Again, seven menorahs on your windowsill is a beautiful thing. Tosos doesn't care about how beautiful this is. He cares about if the people walking by are going to get the message or not. Rashi and Rambam, again, I quote the Rambam right here in small writing, argues with that. He says, "Kamen eres u'malik v'chanukah, perek dalet halacha aleph, mitzvah sasheyeh kol bayis u'bayis madlik ner echad, bein shehayu anshei habayis merubin, bein shelohayu." That's the regular mitzvah. V'hamahader, etc. And get to the underline. V'hamahader yetzer al zeh, the mahadrin min mahadrin he's talking about. V'osa mitzvah min ha-muvchar, the most beautiful of all ways of doing the mitzvah. Madlik ner l'chol echad v'echad b'layla harishon. Clearly arguing on Tosos, saying each person lights 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You could have 55 lit candles on any given night, depending on how big your family is. It doesn't really seem to faze the Rambam that someone walking by would be totally confused, might see a beautiful light show, but wouldn't understand what the message is necessarily. And the Rambam's saying, listen, the mitzvah of Pirsumei Nisa has more to do with your house than to do with the outside public. A very cool illustration of how deep this argument really is. That is an important understanding of what goes on here. I brought in another Rambam. Since I put it on the page, I've been a little hesitant to discuss the point that I saw pointed out to me in a specific source. So I'm going to skip it. Okay? And it just doesn't sit right with me. No, the Rambam uses two different phrases. He uses Tzarech lehodia lehizarba kidei lehodia hanes. He's clearly saying you have to publicize it. And then he says in the very next halacha, Zichron hanes, a remembrance of the miracle. And why does he change his language? Why is one to let everyone know? And why is the other just a remembrance? And there, I saw one source, actually the Rav of Soloveitchik, who wanted to say that there are two different aspects here of how we are publicizing, but I don't want to go into it because I didn't really understand it perfectly. Okay, Pnei Yoshuaville. Check this out, Brisker. The Gemara. This is on the Gemara that we read. The Pnei Yoshua raises a very important point, saying something very fascinating and mysterious about this mitzvah. It's this, in the Gemara, the Pnei Yoshua, Tanu Rabbanan mitzvahs Chanukah Neri Shebeso. Nira. It seems. Demasha nishtana mitzvah zu mishar mitzvos. That the reason why this mitzvah is different from all other mitzvos, ma nishtana, interesting, shehein chovas aguf, the other mitzvos of the universe, literally all of the other ones, are a chovas aguf. It is your individual obligation to perform that mitzvah. Shehayachayev al kol yachid v'yachid. That every chiyuv, al kol yachid v'yachid. Each individual has the obligation to perform the mitzvah themselves. The kaima lan nami mitzvah bo yoser mi b'shlucho. It is better for you to do the mitzvah than for you to have a messenger do the mitzvah for you. Why? Because there is a certain undeniable significance placed on you doing your mitzvah. It has nothing to do with anyone else. Yes, there are times where you can be yotze with someone else, but be clear, they are doing the mitzvah that is your obligation for you. They are not doing their mitzvah and now you no longer have a mitzvah or something like that. It's you are still accomplishing your mitzvah just through someone else. Here, though, the Pnei Yoshua doesn't even spell it out completely, but he's saying something weird is going on here with Neros Chanukah because it doesn't seem to have only to do with me. Again, another illustration of this is if you light your menorah and it's above 20 amos high, you have done absolutely nothing. It is as if you turned on a lamp. Why? Because no one could see it. Have you ever heard of such a thing? I'm lighting the menorah. I live in a certain area where it's 20 amos high, or I have a really big house, and it looks really cool when I light it in the top window of my house. You're telling me I didn't do the mitzvah? Yes, you didn't do the mitzvah because it's not about you. Yes, you're the one doing it, but it's not about you. So what does he say is the explanation for this? Ella, the underline, the shiny hacha, she'ein hacha ikar ha-mitzvah. Here it's different because the ikar of the mitzvah is not you. Ella besamach, sorry, did I mess this up already? The ikar of the mitzvah is only when it is adjacent to the public. Shehu mishum persume nisa, and that is because persume nisa. Mishum ka chetilu chovas mitzvah zu, ki ilu hi chovas abayis. And that is why they made the obligation of this mitzvah the chovas abayis. Okay, so I forgot one other point that he mentioned. It's not just that it's about the public and not about you, but when did we ever hear that there is a mitzvah that the house has to do? Now, I'm not talking about something like a mezuzah, like if you own a house, you have to put up a mezuzah. I'm talking about the people in the house have to do a mitzvah together because they biologically are related to each other. When do we see that? Everyone has to bring a Karban Pesach. Correct, but they are bringing is their own individual obligation that they are fulfilling. It's very similar. It's a very subtle difference, but it is not a mitzvah of the household. It is a mitzvah of every individual that can be accomplished in a group. Sort of like Kiddush, where someone could make Kiddush and everyone could be Yotze with them. Here, I don't necessarily have the chiyuv of menorah. I happen to live in a house where that house, someone has to be putting up a menorah for us. That's a weird concept. Yes? As what? Shabbat candles is interesting. Correct. I wouldn't necessarily say that is a mitzvah of the house. That is also an individual. But it is something that... Yeah. The husband is definitely... Meaning if the wife isn't home, the husband has to do it. Not necessarily because the house has a chiyuv, but because... The individual house owner has a chiyuv. I should think before I speak. 1 second.
Well, for sure, the house owner, the individual has a chiyuv.
I think I'm saying it correctly. Meaning, if I'm by myself for a Shabbos, I have to light candles.
If you're by yourself.
Correct, but I can't light a menorah. I can't light a menorah in my living room if I can light it outside because.
Okay.
I hear what you're saying. I'm mixing up two things. I do have to light a menorah. Correct. So he's definitely referring to Ner Ishu Beso, which we're saying is only the... Just trying to review these halachos in my head so I don't tell you a different religion. If someone is lighting at your house and you're not there, you are Yotze. You're not Yotze Mahadrim and Mahadrim, but you are Yotze. I believe that's a bidyeved situation, but that is halacha. Now, I believe we are always talking about the Mahadrim and Mahadrim situation, where if you're somewhere, also still do it, and also go get from someone else, and if you're at a guest house, if you are a guest at someone's house, you should give them a couple of shekels, and they'll light for you, because you're in their house.
Isn't there a chovah to light where you sleep?
Correct, or where you eat.
But meaning that it's not about your house, or where your home is, but wherever you're going to sleep, that's where you need to light candles.
Correct. So what I need to get more clarity on is our entire chov is not referring to Ner Ishu Beso. So my question is, does that mean we're just forgetting Ner Ishu Beso, or that Ner Ishu Beso is not lahalacha, or we've just totally decided we're not going to even go down to the Ner Ishu Beso level, we're going to be doing it mahadrim and mahadrim, and we're going to call that halacha. That's why I don't want to say either way. I apologize for not being as informed about this, but I think we are calling standard halacha mahadrim and mahadrim. And what the Pnei Yehoshua is picking up on is, it seems that the basic form of this mitzvah has nothing to do with me. And that's a weird thing to say that there is a mitzvah that exists that doesn't have to do with any individual person. There are mitzvahs that have to do with the tzibur, like Kriyas HaTorah, for example. If you aren't in shul, then you don't have a responsibility to hear Torah reading. If you are in a community, you need to, if you are in shul, you need to, we'll go into that another time. Yes?
Well, even with Ner Ishu Beso, though, it's still different because the mitzvah of lighting Shabbat candles isn't a mitzvah on the household, it's kind of a mitzvah on a volunteer in the household, right? Like someone has to do it. But the mitzvah of Hanukkah candles isn't one person has to do it.
It's the master of the house.
But even if the one person does it, it's a chiyuv on everybody. It's just the one person does it as representative for everybody. But it's not the same kind of thing of like, there's a mitzvah. But Shabbos candles are like
a
mitzvah
on everybody. You're just
on everyone in the house.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not just a mitzvah that has to happen according to somebody.
It's a good point. These are good points, and I wish I had more clarity on it. But it's also that it could be also that the point that the Pnei Yeshua is arguing on, David, is not necessarily la halacha. It's not necessarily that he's arguing on why is the halacha that if I'm somewhere I don't need a light as long as there's a menorah in my house. He's saying the Gemara imposes or introduces this whole mitzvah as something that is not my obligation. It's a household obligation. Where does this idea come from? How does this idea even exist? And he's saying that because of Pursu Menisa it exists, and I underline the end of this paragraph, Ve'adayin Tzarech Iyun, because he's admitting that this is not so clear what is going on here, even though he suggests an answer. But the answer that he suggests is amazing. What he says is that Pursu Menisa is not an additional component of the mitzvah. It is the mitzvah. It is so much the mitzvah that it is not even your mitzvah, it's their Pursu Menisa's mitzvah. The mitzvah is it being publicized, and you just have to do that so that it will happen. I hope that was clear. If I didn't do it, then it wouldn't happen. That's the only reason I have to do it, because it has to happen. It's literally like God commanded Pursu Menisa to exist. And the only way it can exist is if we make it exist. And that's why we need to do it. For eight days in Kislev, people have to know that the Hanukkah story happened. And the only way that will happen is if Jewish people light menorahs. But not that the rabbis instituted a holiday where we have a mitzvah of lighting a menorah. That is the suggestion here. Again, this is not lahalacha, so don't go home and tell your parents that I just learned I don't have to light menorah this year. Yes?
This might be slightly off topic, but do you think that us lighting a menorah actually spreads the story of what happened and kind of the miracle of what happened?
Good question. Let's revisit it soon. Meaning, we're going with the assumption that if someone looks at the lights as they're walking by, they'll start remembering how God is amazing,
right.
As opposed to remembering that lights are amazing, which is another possibility. So how do we make sure that the message gets out there? It's a good point. Did you have a question?
It's the Pursu Menisa is on only Jewish people?
I saw online that there is someone that gave a shiur on Pursu Menisa for non-Jews. I didn't listen to the shiur. I didn't say not for me. I just didn't get to it.
Well, you walked out.
No, I'm like, what is that? Non-Jews? I didn't get the chance to listen to it. Although, if I had enough time, I would listen to many such shiurim. Let's go with the assumption that it is the Jewish people.
Only.
Yeah, let's go with that assumption. Let's say we're in Israel.
Where there's only Jews?
Where the large majority of the people walking by would be Jews.
You'd assume that a Jew would walk by during that time period. Right, but then again, you're stranded in the middle of Georgia.
I would say maybe to simplify the question, but then I need to move on because we're running out of time. Maybe a different but similar question would be, is there a point to publicizing the miracle to someone who also lit their menorah? And what if everyone in the entire city just came back from lighting their menorah and on their way home they saw mine? Did I accomplish anything? Maybe. Maybe. Maybe the point is, guys, that Hanukkah's in the air. I'm serious. Holiday season. Before there were billboards, before there were advertisements on TV, you needed to get the word out somehow that something was special about this time of year. And this was a way to do it. Again, if you think about the idea of a symbol, of symbolic gestures, it's not necessarily to inform someone of something they don't already know. It's to display a message. However, to get it out there, even if people know it 50%, maybe if it's out there more, people will know it 75%, so to speak. Okay, I wanted to bring up a separate and interesting, I want to make a little left turn or right turn, a turn of sorts, from this way of analyzing the mitzvah and go to what really, if maybe it does have to do with us, a little more than we thought. Up until now, I was trying to show how there are strong opinions stated in very, very good sources, valid sources, that talk about how the idea of Pursu Menisa is that the word has to get out, and that it is so much so that the obligation isn't even necessarily on us as individuals as much as it is on the idea getting out there through us. But what exactly is the message, Cincy, that we're getting out? What are we saying when we are lighting the menorah? Yes, on a basic level, we are saying that we want to show the world, or our own community, or whoever sees these lights, that God performed a miracle for us on this day. But maybe there's something more to this message. Maybe there's something more specific that we're getting at. Maybe there's even more of a reason why this is so intricately connected to the mitzvah itself that you can't separate them. And I bring up a second Pnei Yehoshua on the very same Gemara. And I hopefully, with the help of God, will show you how this ties in to the same point. He asks a very important question that if you haven't heard before, it behooves you to pay attention now to see what this question is, because you can't start Hanukkah without understanding this. L'chora yesh l'tzmoa. It is apparently good to ask, Kol Torah Hanesa Zeh Lama, why did this miracle need to happen? Of the candles I'm talking about, the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Deha Kaimalan Tuma Hutra B'tzibor. V'hayu yecholim l'halik v'shem en tameh. Have you heard of this question, guys? This miracle that God performed for us was irrelevant. It was very relevant. It was unnecessary. It's unnecessary. It is as if we were walking across the street with a green guy sign saying we could walk, and someone runs up to us and holds our shoulder and helps us across the street. I'd be like, what are you doing, guy? Because I am able to do this myself. That is the miracle that took place on Hanukkah that we are so very amazingly publicizing. There is a rule that in the Beis HaMikdash, any service that needs to be done on behalf of the entire Jewish people in the Beis HaMikdash can be done even in a state of impurity. Unlike when you're an individual, if you want to do some sort of service but you are impure, you cannot do that service inside of the temple. That is allowed. It is not ideal, but it is allowed. Therefore, the Hasmoneans, who entered the temple upon being victorious against the Greeks, and found that there were many, many, many jugs of impure oil, but only one pure jug of oil, they could have just said, okay, we'll have to use the impure oil because it's allowed. And they would have done it, and there would have been no miracle because they would have just replace the oil the second day with impure oil, and we wouldn't have done anything wrong. And yet God made this miracle exist despite it not even being necessary. It is a great question. It makes this whole thing kind of weirder that an unnecessary miracle is the one miracle of all of the miracles that we have that a mitzvah is based on, it so much so that we have to publicize it more than focus on our own individual effort here. I hope that was clear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe because they were afraid that it might cause for some sort of precedent. That from any case from then on, people would say,
oh, impure oil is allowed. Remember that time where we did that?
It would be a situation where, you know, he's supposed to do something, but, you know, it's a bit difficult to do it, you know, and you'd be like, oh, okay, well, you know.
Okay, we're getting. Keep that. I would say both are true. I would say I don't know how many people would learn from this case and say, okay, next Tuesday let's do the impure oil thing. Oh, that worked.
No, not for this, but for any other situation where the mitzvah says that they need to do something, but
it's allowed to do it in a Plan B kind of way.
Yeah.
So okay, maybe. Now I wanna get to the answer that Pnei Yehoshua says. Lekach nira the ikar hanes. Oh my gosh, this is money. Lekach nira, the ikar hanes. The most important part of the miracle, lo na'asa ela lehodia lahem chivas hamakom aleim. The whole point of this miracle was God was sending a message to us. I love you guys. I'm here for you. I'm not just saving your very lives, which was the whole miracle with the war thing, but I want you to even do things right. I want you to even not have to kind of mess with a plan B, because I want to show you, you did good out there. You did good. And I appreciate your efforts, and I want to extend my effort, me being God, not literally, but in this specific dialogue, monologue. And therefore, I want to perform this miracle to you. Again, they were, if you think about it, they were looking at this miracle saying, wait, what's going on here? This is kind of weird, because this is, shouldn't be happening, and we have a bunch of oil over there. So God is saying something to us. What is he trying to say? Maybe he's saying, hey, he liked the fact that we did it right. He liked the fact that we didn't want to settle, that we wanted to do it the right way, and he wanted to let us do it the right way. That was the message. If you were there, you would probably have had to make that similar conclusion. And he goes on to say that the Greeks were oppressing them, and he was showing them right after we beat them that we defeated our enemies. L'kach na'asa lehem gamke ne'zeh. After Hashem performed the miracle allowing us to defeat our enemies, he also did this miracle, b'inyan haneros, regarding the menorah, shehu edus li'Yisrael, it is a testimony to the Jews, shehashchina shor b'hem, that God is there. And that's the point. L'hodia shechazru l'chibasan harishona, that God, literally, he accepted them again. They rededicated themselves, and God said, I accept your gesture of, you know, renewal, of trying to rededicate yourself. Now, I was being very specific in terms of the two-step process here. The Pnei Yeshua didn't mention it. You should have caught me on it, because the Pnei Yeshua didn't say anything about what we did. Pnei Yeshua only talked about what God did. And I sort of stuck in there very sneakily. Is that a word? Sneakily? Sneakily.
Sounds like a sound.
Sounds like a weird like iPhone app. You know how they, those made up words that they do, like Weebly and Wamu, or like, I don't know. Anyways, don't take that from me. That's my idea. iPhone app, sneakily. We did something that brought about God's miracle making. That's what I added in there, and it makes sense because God was validating what we did by saying, I love you guys again because of what you did. I'm going to get to the last few sources and bring it all together. The Shulchan Aruch says, the next source, Ribui ha-se'udos shemarbim bahem heim se'udos harashus shelo kavaon lemishta v'simcha. There's a whole other topic that I was actually toying with giving the entire shiur on this topic, which is there a mitzvah of simcha on Hanukkah? A mitzvah of simcha typically in our religion means you have to have a festive meal and you have to have some sort of meat and some sort of wine or something like that, which is very well known to be done on the holiday of Purim, where we do a massive se'uda, and that is an expression of our happiness on that day, marbim besimcha. Now, it seems that Purim and Chanukah would have similar things. God did a great miracle. We were saved. Let's rejoice. And yet, the Shulchan Aruch is pointing out that if you didn't have a festive meal on any of the days of Chanukah, you're still good. Because there is no mitzvah to have a festive meal on Chanukah. It is only reshus. It is only a voluntary thing. If you want to do the Chanukah party, do it. But I didn't tell you to. Not my fault. If something goes wrong. Now, why is that? Why is this a reshus? Again, this is so inconsistent, if I may say so. We're supposed to put it out there, more than Purim, that something amazing happened. We're supposed to go out of our way to put it in front of our house, or even in front of our entire property, that some amazing miracle happened, but if you want to be happy about it, it's up to you. Does that make any sense? Purim, if you're on your own, it still works totally fine. Except if you're drinking, you probably should have some friends around, because it's not a party without it. But if you happen to be alone, you're still good. But you have to eat and drink. You have to be happy. It's kind of strange. Now the Mishnah Berurah, the Chavetz Chaim, the author of the Mishnah Berurah, points out something in the name of the Levush, a very important, interesting, subtle difference between Chanukah and Purim. And I will say it a bit outside. Purim, our very lives were threatened. Literally every Jew was going to be destroyed. It was going to be the end of the Jewish people, literally. And what God did was save us from death. And we rejoice by denying them their ability to kill us by eating and drinking till we can't eat and drink anymore. Right. You tried to kill our liver, we will kill our liver for you. That is not accurate. Do not quote me on that. But we sort of defy their desire to take away our bodies by using our bodies to say thank you to God and to express our happiness. It is a very, it is a relationship there between what happened on that day and how we express our happiness as a result of us being saved. And if you took it to the next step, you would notice that on Hanukkah, our lives were not threatened. The Rambam does not mention that they wanted to kill us. We say in Al Anisim, we didn't say Lashmid La Rogula Abeid Es Kol HaYehudim, which is the Megillah story. It says Lahashkicham Torasecha LaAviram Mechukei Ritzonecha. They wanted us to just stop being special and stop learning Torah and stop swinging a chicken over our head and blowing a ram's horn. They want us to stop that stuff, the crazy stuff. So what do? We don't eat and drink because that doesn't make sense. That's not part of the relationship. The relationship is, you want to kill our Torah? We're going to Torah the heck out of you. We're going to express our happiness in other ways, in spiritual ways. So we're not going to have a crazy meal, or at least it's not going to be an obligation to have a crazy, awesome meal. Our obligation is going to be to publicize the spiritual aspect of this holiday, the nes, the miracle part that took place here. Now, there's another beautiful point here that I want to have bring this whole thing home, and we will wrap it up. The word reshus is a great word to use here. Reshus means voluntary, means you don't have to, but if you want to go out of your way, so do it. Now, what's funny is this idea already presented itself earlier in this year. We talked about, based on the Gemara, that the obligation of the mitzvah of Hanukkah is one candle per house each night. Everyone did their obligation. Does anyone do that nowadays? I would even say that it's so confusing to me what the actual obligation is as a rabbi, yikes, because we don't even discuss what our basic obligation is. It's not even close to the discussion because all we talk about is mahadrin min mahadrin, how many people, everyone get your menorah, everyone gets seven lights because it's the seventh night. We don't talk about another option. And here we go. Hanukkah's coming up in a few days. Let's digest this a little. The point of Hanukkah is that we went out of our way to send a message. Again, we were not being physically persecuted. No one was threatening our existence. We were okay if we didn't make too much trouble. Relatively speaking, in the periods of history that we were in exile or we were in some sort of uncomfortable situation with the non-Jews, this was not such a bad one, relatively speaking. And in other generations, I would even surmise that the Jews of those generations would probably say, hey, they're not trying to hurt us, let's just let them make these decrees and we'll just do what we can and at least we're alive and still making money and our store is open still, and that's okay. Here, Jews took a stand. They said, I don't want to live like this anymore, so I'm going to voluntarily start a war and fight for what I stand for. This is why the miracle that God performed was exactly like that. Oh, you took a stand? That was beautiful. I should have said that in a more emotional way, because that's probably what God was feeling. Look at my children. They care about me. They don't just care about their own lives, because if they only cared about their own lives, they didn't have anything to worry about. But they were worried about their relationship with me, and that was in trouble. And they literally risked their lives in a very stupid gamble, one priestly family against the Greek army. because they said, I don't want to live like this anymore because my relationship with God is going down the drain. And God said, I like that. I like the love that I'm getting here, so I'm going to give it back to you in the form of, you wanted to go out of your way to do my mitzvos, I'm going to go out of my way to give you mitzvos the right way, pure oil. The whole holiday is based on sending a message. I wrote it at the bottom of this page in English. The holiday of Chanukah is all about making a statement. God's statement was the miracles of Chanukah, that I care about you, that I'm still here. That's what the Bnei Yeshua said, that I love you, not just unconditionally, but because I see how much you love me too. And our statement was that we stand for something. We don't just stand for not dying. We stand for an enlightened existence, without which it's not worth living. I am willing to put my life on the line in order to preserve the way of life that I want to live. That's why, again, much like the Chashmonaim, who made a very public statement to the world around them, that we stand for God, Mi Lashem Elai, my three-year-old came home saying that, it was very crazy, kind of creepy. Mi Lashem Elai, and he had a flag, I was like, whoa, don't hurt me. I'm on your team, I'm rabbi, see the beard, okay, just don't hurt me. Oh, shoot, totally lost what I was saying. They took a stand, sorry. And that's why what we do on Chanukah is we make a very public statement. It is not about me, what I need to do. Again, hear that, what my obligation is, my chiyuv of the mitzvah. Every other mitzvah, God told me I'm obligated to do something. This is not about my obligation. This is about what message I want to send to the world around me about what I believe in, about what the Jewish people are all about. That is much more important than what my obligation is to do for me. That message is a great one to send to the world, and it's a beautiful idea that Rashi and the Rambam feel that that message is equally important to send to the members of your own household. Hey, house, what do we believe in? Serious. If I'm raising a family, I want to show them what it is that I stand for, so that when they get older, they'll show their kids what they stand for. And if I only tell the non-Jews or the other Jews outside what I stand for, and I don't remember to tell that to my kids, so then what's their Chanukah going to be when they grow up? A beautiful idea. Very beautiful idea. And the whole point was that the Jewish fire was sort of flickering. They weren't into it. And the Chashmonaim said, enough is enough, let's get back into it. Not only did they fight for their lives, but the miracle of Chanukah was about not just doing it, but doing it right. It was a renewal, a rededication. Again, not a coincidence that what they did after winning the war was a rededication of the Beis HaMikdash on a very practical level. They rededicated the Mikdash, they repurified everything, they rededicated their service on an individual, on a global level. The last point that I wanted to bring, which I'm just going to say outside, and maybe I'll just read the bottom English, is from Rabbi Sechar Frand, amazing speaker, Gadol Talmud Chacham. He quotes the Bnei Yisachar, who comments that Chanukah is unique among the Jewish holidays in that it is the only holiday that spans 2 months, which means that Rosh Chodesh falls out on Chanukah every single year. It's the only holiday that coincides with Rosh Chodesh. Why is that? We can perhaps suggest that the same idea applies to Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh implies renewal of the moon and of the month. This is the theme of Chanukah, the renewal of the spirit of the Jews and the renewal of the service in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, just to bring home this point, the first half of this shiur was about the halachos of Pirsumei Nisa, and what it is about, and how it's not about the individual, but it's about the idea getting out there. But the second half of Pirsumei Nisa is that, yes, as an individual, what we are doing on Chanukah is we are sending a message. It is that we have to do something. God made the world so that if anything is going to be done, we have to do it. That's not a coincidence. And therefore, and again, take this to heart, God wanted us to be sending a message, and if we're sending a message, we have to believe in that message. Don't send the message that you don't believe in. That's kind of strange and ingenuine. So if every year we are shouting from the mountaintops, look, not only God loves me, but I'm standing up for God, make sure that comes back at you. That's why many gedolim, many Hasidish Rebbeim are known to have to sit for many hours even and stare at the Hanukkah lights. I don't know if you've heard about this. They just sit and look at the lights. Now, I'm sure there are lots of holy thoughts going on in their heads. But I would say if there's one thought that I would have if I was a Chassidish Rebbe staring at the lights, I don't need to be a Chassidish Rebbe, I'll just stare at the lights, is getting that point back at me. Looking at the message that I'm sending out through those lights and sort of using it as a mirror and saying, is that message really getting back into me or not? Do I really stand up for God? Does that really influence the decisions that I make in my life, the environment that I surround myself in, that I stand for God, the way I talk, the way I act, the way I behave? Does everything that I do, are my actions a symbol of I stand for God? Maybe we could ask that ourselves. But the idea is that it's hard to make that statement all year round. You'd probably get kicked out of a lot of public functions if you just shouted everywhere, I stand for God! It'd be kind of strange, which is why we only do it for 8 days a year. The two sources that I didn't mention on top is explaining Rosh Chodesh and Hanukkah more about it as a month of renewal, of renewing that commitment to standing up for God. But hopefully, through these ideas, we will, just like the Chashmonaim of back in the day, be able to rededicate ourselves on all levels, just practically, but even just internally. I think a lot of Hanukkah and the idea of lights are so amazing because it's something that's physical, but not really. A light always symbolizes, you know, something that's like spiritual that you can't really touch, that's there, but there's something beyond it. It's not a coincidence that lights are the mitzvah of this holiday, and a lot of the power of Hanukkah is that it has the ability to rekindle thoughts and feelings inside of us that, yeah, caught that one. Thoughts and feelings inside of us that we that may have been dormant for a while, that may have been getting stale maybe, and us saying, okay, I stand for something. I do believe in this stuff. Let's go in for another round, the way a moon goes in and out to come back out. Okay, thank you very much. Everyone should have a beautiful, publicly awesome, voluntarily happy Hanukkah.
The piano at the end in the background.
Yeah.